Chair, I can see from my side. Let me check. I've got Honorable Gomba, Honorable Kego, Honorable Gumbi, Honorable Winkler, Honorable Mpuse, Honorable Muteka, Honorable Makubele, Mashele. All those members are already inside the meeting, Chairperson. From my side, I think from the committee side, we do have a quorum. DDG, can I check with you? Is your team, are they all inside?
Okay, I think we are ready for the meeting, and we can start with the meeting. It's already 1 minute past nine. Good morning, honorable members and the officials who are in the platform. I was requested to share this meeting. Since the chairperson of the committee has an appointment with her medical doctor at 9:30, and I was requested to share this meeting. So I would love to welcome you all and thank you for having attended this meeting. And I would love Mr. Boltino to take us through the agenda and also flag the agenda for adoption.
Thank you, Chair. The chairperson, here is the agenda that was circulated to all members of the portfolio committee. The meeting is planned to start at 9:00. We have opened the system as early as 8:30. Then there are only two items on this agenda, Chair. One, we will be getting a briefing from the Department of Employment and Labour on the employment patterns in the tourism sector. And then following that, the committee will interact with the department and deliberate on the presentations that have been sent to us. And then thereafter, we will have a way forward as to what then do we do going forward as a portfolio committee. Then the second item is the minutes of the previous meeting, Chairperson. Chair will recall, or the committee will recall, last week we were adopting our BRRR report, and that report has been submitted through to Parliament. I am aware it has already placed on parliamentary papers, waiting for the National Assembly to process our report. Chair, just to give some sort of a background to this request or to this meeting that has been requested by the committee. Chairperson, the committee will recall some time ago at around about 2010. When the portfolio committee was requested by Parliament and other parliamentary committees, when we were doing an oversight on the state of readiness for 2010 Soccer World Cup, the committee was one of those committees that were all over the country checking how ready South Africa was for the 2010 Soccer World Cup. As we were traveling throughout the country, One of the observations that was made by the committee in those establishments that we went to throughout the country, the question that was asked by the committee was, why it seems as if all our establishments, they have a number of foreign nationals with them. At that time, the committee agreed that we need to engage the Department of Labor just to find out how is this situation or how extensive this situation is in the tourism sector. Now, subsequent to that, a meeting between the committee and the department was held. In that meeting in 2010, the department indicated to us, as they were called the Department of Labor at that time, that they are aware of this, but unfortunately, they were going to do some research work. They are going to do some research work as the department just to understand how extensive this matter was. Now, if that is the case, and then...
Chairperson, can I rise on a point of procedure, please?
Okay. Okay, somebody speaking, Chair.
Chair, can we first adopt this agenda before we get the explanations that is necessary? But can we first, I propose that we adopt the agenda.
Okay, that can be done, Honorable April. Can you start proposing the adoption of our agenda? And can we also get a seconder so that you can carry on? Honorable April, are you proposing the adoption?
I have proposed the adoption of the agenda, Chairperson.
Oh, thank you very much. Do you have any seconder?
Seconded, Chair.
Thank you very much. Thank you for the correction, Honorable April. You can continue, Mr. Bertina.
Okay, thank you, Chair. Thank you, Chairperson. I'm sorry for that. Then I was saying, Chair, just subsequent to that, then the department indicated to the committee at that time, they were going to do some research just to understand how extensive this situation is in the tourism sector. If there is a need, a legislation will be promulgated. If I recall well, at about 2014 or 2015, so there was an employment services bill that came through to Parliament, Chairperson, and it went through the process through the Portfolio Committee on Labour, and that legislation was ultimately approved by Parliament. Now, what the committee has been wanted to know from the department, since that act was passed by Parliament was signed off by the president, how has been the situation from that time up to now? In other words, what are the employment patterns in the tourism sector? Because I'm not sure, it could be a perception, it could be real, or it could be just a perception, because we want to understand how the numbers are as far as the this situation it is. So DDG, that is the reason, or that is the background why the committee invited you and your team, so that you can come to the committee and talk to us on this situation. Thank you, Chairperson. I think that's basically the, in a nutshell, a background why the committee instructed us to find a space in the committee program so that we can invite the Department of Employment and Labor to make the presentations to the committee. Another thing, Chair, I do know, all members will see that we have been sent three presentations. And then all of them they will be dealt with in this committee when the time comes. Thank you, Chairperson. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you very much, Mr. Boltina. I think it is the time now for the department to give us a presentation, and also let me also take this opportunity to welcome the Department of Labor and say to them, we're looking forward to their presentation. Over to the department, please. And please start by introducing yourselves so that we can know who is here with us. The department.
Recording in progress.
Good morning, Honorable Chair. My name is Witumelo Muloi. I'm the Deputy Minister of the Department of Employment and Labor. I'm with the Chief of Staff in the Office of the Minister, Dade Kangala Mutumela, and we are with the Acting Commissioner in the UIF, Mr. Mziawa. We are with the DDG also, and that is Mrotoba. We are with that is Tebogo Tejani. Our DDG of TS deals with migration policy, I think those are the ones that I've seen. Maybe Dade Mrotoba will introduce those that I have not seen for now. I see Karabo Makhakhane from Office of the Deputy Minister, and then I see Nomcebo Chabalala from the UIF, also who's part of this session. And I think Dade Tebogo Tejani also comes from labor activation project programs. And I think that they will lead us, either the Chief of Staff or that the Advocate Yawa will lead us in terms of the presentation. Apologies on behalf of the Minister. The Minister has joined the President outside of the country. They are in Cote d'Ivoire. He is not able to attend this meeting. Thank you so much. And thank you, honorable members, for this invite of the department. As much as we are, we will be able to answer to most of your questions. And in case we are unable to satisfy the committee on some questions, we will appreciate it if we are given the opportunity to come back later with further information that we might not have been able to supply the portfolio committee with. Thank you so much.
Thank you very much, GM. My name is Sam Rotova. I was asked by the Director General to lead the delegation. The DG is also off sick after his return from Kenya. And the acting DG, Ms. Bronkhorst, is also leading the delegation that is addressing the audit committee. Chairperson, I'll switch my video off for, I don't know if the protocol, you would require me to leave the video on. I was going to switch it off so that I can save interference and talk to a number of issues. Should I leave the video on, Chairperson?
No, okay. You can switch it off.
Honorable Chairperson, okay, thank you. Honorable Chairperson, the team that is with me is going to address a number of points. I will deal with the question on the policy on employment on foreign nationals and the work permits issues. Advocate Yawa and Mr. Tejani will come in on the issues around the work that we are doing insofar as assisting in the sector. And Mr. Thibaut Zana will deal with the inspections that we have been conducting in the area and some of the challenges that we are facing. And we have also asked Ms. Tendani Ramlongo to talk about some of the statistical issues in case there are further questions in the area. Let me start off, honorable members, by thanking you for giving us this opportunity and to also indicate to yourselves that in the work that we are doing, yes, there are a number of legislations that are currently governing the area. The Citizenship Act, which is under the Home Affairs Refugees Act, the Immigration Act 2002. It is correct, Honorable Chairperson, that the department, in terms of all our labor legislation, the only act that deals with immigration is the Employment Services Act. However, that is the act that we have since identified that there are a number of provisions that are lacking and it needs to be strengthened. Now, before I go into the presentation, let me also provide some background information in that the issue of foreign nationals is very complex. It's something that even the president ended up establishing an interministerial committee on migration that has 14 departments. Initially, it was 12. The Department of Tourism, Small Business, Trade and Industry, International Relations, and so on are also part of that committee. And our minister, Minister Nesi and Minister Mtswaledi, are co-chairs of the IMC. And that IMC, the Interministerial Committee on Migration, is co-chaired by the two ministers and supported by a technical committee of the director generals from the two departments. And we also have the 12 departments. The additional two was defense and education that came in later. Let me also indicate, Honorable Chairperson, that apart from the work that we are doing and what I'm going to present, when we went to cabinet, we did indicate that the part that we are going to address will only address the formal sector and people employed within that sector. However, we will still have challenges if the Immigration Act, Citizenship Act, and the Refugees Act are not strengthened. And as we speak, the Department of Home Affairs is reviewing all the three legislations with the intention of coming up either with a single legislation or strengthening the provisions of the three legislations. Linked to that is the Border Management Act, which established the Border Management Authority, because we do have a serious problem of the porous borders, especially in certain sections of our country. There is no border there. There are a lot of things, trafficking, be it human, be it crime, be it human, be it illicit goods, etc. And the Border Management Authority is trying to address those problems so that we have a strengthened border. And the last point that we also mentioned was a complementary policy that is going to have to come from the small business development, because, honorable members, as we address the problem within the informal sector, the tendency will be that people will move from the informal, from the formal to informal. And if there is no complementary policy that addresses the question of trading by foreign nationals in the informal sector, what will happen is that it will be a translation of jobs from the formal to the informal. And because of the nature of the undocumented in South Africa for refugees. We have lost court cases where the courts have said you either have the camps to deal with this problem, or you must have a means of feeding these foreign nationals if they are in your country as refugees, or alternatively, you have to allow them to work so that they can feed themselves and survive. And those are some of the problems. You also know that we also have special dispensation permits that are within the Department of Home Affairs, something that made headlines last week, where because of the number of foreign nationals in the country, the Department of Home Affairs had to allow them to continue to remain in the country and extend it. So let me now address the question of the policy that we are working on. And if Matebogo can share the presentation. I will continue. Can anyone see the presentation?
No, I see nothing here.
Mema Taiwoko, if you can share the presentation. Have you connected, Matape? Matape, just respond so that we can know that you are in the meeting. And okay.
Yes.
Thank you. Okay. If you can move on to the next slide. I think this policy, honorable members, is something that we have started in 2017, trying to address the national, the labor migration. If you can move to the next slide. This policy is attempting to do four things, you know, the previous one. One slide back. This policy is trying to do four things, honorable members. Firstly, it is trying to address the issue that was raised when we started with this meeting, that in 2010, when you did the inspection or you did the oversight in the various sectors, especially B&Bs, restaurants, etc., the hospitality and tourism sector, as we normally combine the two, the restaurants and the malls, shops, and so on, and the accommodation sector. And the Minister of Finance, the previous one, Ms. Mboweni, was on record of saying, you go into this sector, the language that the people who work in this area speak will normally be foreign nationals. And Honorable Chairperson, as for the numbers, it becomes very difficult because the formal sectors like your garden court, Holiday Inns, Protea, etc., those would normally have people that are documented. They will register them, and they will also have locals. They will abide to local laws. So statistics in those sectors are simple, and you are able to get because they provide their employment equity reports. But sectors that are in the obscure places of our country normally employ people that are not documented, they are not on their books, and they employ them under certain complex processes that Mr. Tana will talk to when he talks to the question of people in that area. The point is that the undocumented is very difficult to know the numbers whilst there are estimates on the documented. And that makes it very difficult for us to can say this is the numbers. However, you are correct, Honorable Member, that locals have this perception, sometimes it may be correct, that the number of foreign nationals, especially undocumented, are distorting the labor market because they are employed in some of those sectors. That is the first point that we are trying to address. The second one, obviously, is that South Africa in its development is having to compete with other international countries. Like in 2010, we had to bring in skills that we do not have in the country, and the policy addresses that point to say under what conditions can you bring in skilled labor that you don't have. The third point that the policy is trying to address is the question of protection of migrant rights and their families. We are part of an international community. There are global treaties, and foreign nationals have to be treated in line with the international treaties, especially those that came in through either as visitors, as diplomats, as people having the work place permits, and so on. Even foreign nationals that are not documented, our constitution protects their rights as human beings, and on certain things, we have to provide them with those. If they are injured, they cannot be turned away from hospitals simply because they are foreign nationals that may not be documented. We do the human rights thing first, and from there on, afterwards, we then deal with the legality aspects, either to deport them and so on. The fourth and the last point is the question of regional integration. South Africa is part of the SADC community and of the African community. And whatever we do, we need to respect and make sure that our practice and actions that are taken are within the context of regional integration and cooperation. And that is mainly around the modern day approach on harnessing development around migration. If we can move on to the next point. Next slide. The other point, Honorable Chairperson, is that there are agreements that were reached at SADC level that we should develop policies. And Eswatini, Lesotho, Namibia, Seychelles, Zimbabwe, and so on have already developed these policies. And you may have heard ministers from Botswana, especially on the trade side, saying that there are certain sectors where foreign nationals are not going to be allowed to work, such as hairdressing and so on. Where else and there are also labor migration policies that we have looked at from all these countries, including the entire world, especially with the COVID environment, where some countries, as part of protecting their environment, have also limited the question of employment of foreign nationals in their sector. But we also know of other countries like Japan, Italy, et cetera, where there's aging population, where they're promoting migration because they need a lot of labor in those areas. And daily you see people dying at sea, trying to cross the various channels to try and escape poverty and so on to live in other areas. But also we were addressing the question of insufficient or absent policy framework insofar as the recruitment and management of labor migration is concerned. Our law allows everyone to work, but we were weak in terms of the labor migration management. And we also needed to beef up the current Employment Services Act. And we also needed to make sure that we are able to review the bilateral agreements that were signed in the past. Honorable members may be aware that the neighboring countries were seen as labor recruitment centers to feed the likes of the mines in Kimberley, Johannesburg, and so on. So the agreements signed, some of them dating back to 64, are still in existence, and they are not in line with the constitution and best practices, and they need to be reviewed because they are not balanced. However, some of the neighboring countries are not in favor of them being reviewed because they continue to benefit from them financially because of the large transfers of funds that come from this agreement. If you can move on to the next slide. Next. I've already talked about the racially orientated of our previous dispensation. Now, from the documented statistics, currently we have between 4 and 7% of the labor force being constituted as foreign nationals. However, like I said, undocumented are very difficult to estimate. And if we bring in that point, we may be far beyond the 7%. Stats SA is looking at a new module on how they can go about measuring that number. But you know, if people are vulnerable, honorable members, it is not easy for them to disclose their status, and hence it becomes difficult. And we have seen an increase in the influx since 2000 because of the situation in our neighboring countries. And it is worrying, especially in the informal sector. And that is why we have seen a number of our provinces trying to come up with legislation. And we then advised the small business development that unless they take a lead, we will soon have provinces having different legislation in terms of these areas. And you may have seen the work that they are doing insofar as the white people. If you can move on to the next slide. The guiding principles that we are using in formulating this legislation or amendment to the white paper and contained in the draft policy is that from 2017, we thought we did a lot of good work. However, the president requested us to align with the two new global compacts, the SADC, the AU global treaty, and the SADC level. And we also have to align with the National Development Plan. There's a section that deals with migration. And we are also having to look at the constitutional imperatives of our country so that the national legislation that we are going to introduce, especially around the labor migration, complements what is already in the Immigration Act, Refugees and the Citizenship Act. Next slide, please. Now, the vision that we have put in the draft that we have worked on is to say that we should have a national labor migration that gives rise to efficient and effective government leadership and intervention supported by social partners and all major stakeholders, allowing for safe, orderly, and regular migration for employment of highly, semi, and low-skilled workers to and from South Africa in pursuit of the country's national priorities. Next slide. There are four areas that we have identified. The first one is around the labor migration governance and management, where it will result in us having to adjust the Department of Employment and Labor structures, our capacity to be able to manage that aspect if agreed to. And the Department of Home Affairs has since said that they've been carrying us for too long, and it's high time that we take responsibility in this area, because it is getting them into trouble with the courts. Secondly, we have also, I think, the good start of the interministerial committee that was started by the president and making the Department of Employment and Labour and Home Affairs as a lead. It will allow the president and the country to coordinate interventions in this area, because migration affects all of us. When it comes to residents, hospitals, schools, etc., we are all affected if we don't manage migration very well. And obviously, we have to embark on social dialogue so that we can have social partners on board, because these people form part of unions, but they also form part of employment. And some employers, and you may have seen honorable members recently within the trucking industry, they continue to employ some of these people, and it is continuing to force a friction between locals and foreign nationals. And that is why you may have seen our minister and minister of transport, minister of police and minister of home affairs having to deal with the blockage of freeways because of this demand that local companies should actually release the large number of foreign nationals that are employed in their sector. So it is not affecting only the tourism sector. It is affecting the transport, agriculture, security, construction, and so on. And we believe that unless we have a national strategy that addresses the problem, these things may spill over into other sectors and they may become uncontrollable. If we can move on to the next slide. The second area is around monitoring and evaluation. And obviously, this is going to strengthen our work with STATS SA so that we are able to jointly monitor and we are sure about the numbers and we are able to plan accordingly. Because without the necessary statistics, it is very difficult to plan and make sure that our interventions that we put in place are able to respond accordingly. So the data management around national migration is quite important. The third area, if you can move on to the next slide. Is around labor migration to South Africa. Now, this is where we need to regulate and monitor the number of people, because some come in currently. The Department of Home Affairs regulations allows for any company that invests in South Africa to bring in at least 40% of nationals from their country of origin for the first 5 years and to transfer skills to locals. And 60% of employees must be locals. But we have since realized that people are abusing some of these processes. They overstay. And as such, there's no transfer of skills. But we also have realized that we need to attract skills that we need in the critical areas so that we also have transfer plans and people don't overstay under the disguise that we need them perpetually. We need to address the question of fraudulent papers, because there is a lot of fraud that is happening, unethical behavior. Our foreign embassies are confronted with a problem where the minute people look at the scarce and critical skills list, they simply come to our embassies to apply to come to South Africa. And no sooner they arrive in South Africa, they no longer work in the area that they said they were going to work in. So there's a need to strengthen areas. For instance, where a foreign national comes in and they say we are going to work in this specific mine or in this specific industry, that they work and remain there. And when that work is complete or the work is finished or their permit has expired, that they also leave the country because we have a big problem in this area. The question of migrant rights, social protection of migrants, because there are issues around emoluments, whether it's UIF, pension funds, and all that. Countries of origin have been saying that we are not managing this well by passing on all those emoluments to them. There's a question of regional integration imperatives that we also need to look at. Countries such as Lesotho are basically surrounded by South Africa. So you will need to have a special dispensation to say, how do we deal with countries of this nature that find themselves surrounded completely by South Africa, Swaziland, and so on. You can move on to the next slide. The fourth one is basically labor migration from South Africa to work in other countries. Now, recently, honorable members, you may have noticed that especially in the Gulf region, within the Arab countries, during the current state of COVID and maybe with the recent announcement, a lot of people will not be coming back home working in those countries. And that is because we do not have a data to know the extent of South Africans working abroad. What kind of incentives can we introduce to attract some of the skills that we need that have left either because of political reasons or because of other reasons, maybe there was no work, etc. And some of them, especially nurses and teachers, if you go to New Zealand, UK, etc., they don't have people who like to work in those sectors. We invest a lot of money, we train people, but they recruit a lot of South Africans without any compensation. And once our South African citizens are there, there's no consistency in terms of the protection that is accorded to them. Some will earn money, and when they are supposed to come back, the loss of those countries makes it very difficult for them to bring back what they've worked and earned for. And as such, they end up either trying all other means to become citizens in those countries, or they get involved in illegal activities that ends up getting them arrested and so on. If we can move on to the next slide. Now, if you can skip that one and move on to the next one. This is just the guidelines that you can move on to that. Basically, what we are saying is that if we don't have a streamlined policy, it will perpetuate a fragmented and inconsistent approach, non-alignment of institutional framework, irregular labor migration, non-acquisition and retention of critical skills, insufficient regulatory framework, and absence of a framework for supporting and channeling Africans in the diaspora. And that is why we are talking about the need to consult on this policy and the draft legislation to complement it. You can move on to the next slide. And to date, honorable members, we have done a number of things. We have drafted this policy, like I said, since 2017. We have revised it. It has gone to the Employment Services Board, the Department of Health, and Department of Home Affairs and Employment and Labor has engaged on it. We have tabled it in the Interministerial Committee on Migration in May 2021. We have conducted what we call the socioeconomic impact analysis system. This is a requirement that anything that goes back to the presidency, it must have passed and we are certificated. For them to check that it is in line with the Constitution and to make sure that we are certificated. We have and cabinet, we went there with a request that the policy released for public comment and stakeholder consultations. And cabinet directed that we do a number of things, fix certain things that they were not comfortable with, and then immediately do have informal consultation with social partners at NEDLAC. And
recording in progress
by a cabinet, and it will be available everywhere in the media, and we will take the March and April period for consultations and hopefully adjust the draft policy and take it back to cabinet in May 2022. And if cabinet approves the adjusted policy in May 2022, we are hoping that it will be referred to the parliament for the parliamentary session. And the Labour Portfolio Committee, including yourselves, will then have a chance at parliament to engage on the bill that is going to amend the Employment Services Act to strengthen it in this area. And hopefully by then the small business development will have done their part and the home affairs would have also done their part so that there is synergy in the area of work that we're doing. The last slide. Maybe I'll stop there Ms. Ramlongo, there are other additions around statistics and the trends in the employment within the tourism sector. You can comment on briefly, and then we will, maybe to follow a proper logic, I will then ask after Mrs. Ramlongo's comments, ask Mr. Thibault Tsana to deal with the inspection and the challenges that we are addressing there. And lastly, Advocate Diawa and Mr. Tejan will deal with the interventions in the area. Thank you, Honorable Chairperson, if you can allow Ms. Romlong, or if there are comments on the direction, we'll appreciate that. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Murotowa. I'm not sure the chairperson is allowing me to come in now.
Yes, I do agree. Allow you to come in.
Good morning, chairperson. Morning, everyone. Thank you for this opportunity. I just want to say the statistics that we have or the research that we conducted were primarily aimed to inform the policy development that Mr. Murotowa was talking about. However, I can just briefly share one or two, three things that we observed from the several pieces of research that we conducted. Firstly, QLFS, Quarterly Labor Force Survey, shows disproportionate number of foreign-born migrants in precarious, low-skilled, and informal work. This would include the is taking place in this sector of interest today. This research also confirms, based on the sample done, that foreigners diverse in terms of countries of origin. In other words, I'm confirming that we did see in our research the existence of migrant labor in the specifically hospitality sector. Because when you listen to Mr. Morata's presentation, our focus was not mainly on
are you still there?
Tourism, but stigma and migrants, particularly with these sectors, including the security, as you indicated, the mining, the wholesale and retail security, in fact, I think I mentioned it, and domestic work, hospitality being one of them. If I zoom straight to hospitality, we saw those trends, and we realized that there are diverse countries of origin, diversity in terms of skills base and gender. He emphasized the existence of official statistics that we are still battling with. Though working with SSA, we are moving towards a better position of ensuring that we have credible and official statistics. And this policy, National Labour Migration Policy, also have an aspect that is going to help the country very much in securing official statistics on labor migration. And the other point that we picked up from the research was on the reason why employers are so interested on foreign labor in terms of this sector. And there was an aspect of language that these people can speak foreign language better than our South Africans, and that plays as an asset for discriminating the South African nationals in the sector. And the other thing that came up was higher education of foreign-born workers within the sector. Of course, higher education might be associated with them being able to command the foreign language that the sector requires. But however, of concern to the department was the issue of wage. With these people having higher levels of education, higher educational skills, but on the contrary, they are paid very low wages. That was a concern that the research pointed out to in terms of its findings, that education is high, but the job is categorized in the class of low-skilled jobs that goes with low wages. Then the other aspect that the policy is going to try to help us on is in terms of working condition. The several research that we conducted shows that the working conditions in the hospitality sector is very bad. Workers are easily replaced. Getting job by migrants in this sector is considered as a privilege. There is low unionization. The jobs are mostly part-time and casual. Though a positive aspect was found in terms of safety, that they are adhering to good safety, but the concern was poor adherence to working hours. These workers are subjected to very long working hours. And yeah, these are the things that the department is trying to work on in trying to address, as Mr. Mukalipi, Mr. Moroto indicated, that we are trying over and above wanting the sector to absorb our many low-skilled work seekers in South Africa. We are also worried about the working conditions that are not up to standard, that are compromising the decent work. I think I will stop there. I was just giving a summary of what the research pointed us to. The aim was to inform the National Labour Migration Policy that was presented earlier by the DDG. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much. I'm not sure if the department has another one who can make more input.
Yes, Mr. Tsana will come in on the inspection, and Mr. Tejane and Advocate Yawa will close on the interventions that we are making to assist the sector to grow as well.
Sure, if I may then proceed. Chairperson, the presentation is there. I'm not going to cover the presentation slide by slide. thank you for the opportunity to you and the honorable members for the for us to be able to do this. In the inspection and enforcement services, there is absolutely a direct link between the work that we do in inspections and enforcement services in the Department of Employment and Labour. And over the last, obviously this is a long term, we have been doing quite a bit of work, and I'll just cover that in a moment. Our model that we cover in all the sectors except the mining sector, which is not covered by us, the National Nuclear Regulator, the Railway Safety Regulator, South African Maritime Sector, the Civil Aviation Sector, there are clear lines in terms of our responsibility when it comes to these other state-owned entities or mother government departments that exist out there. So our particular function is clear. And also currently there's a new bill that we are working on, but for now the current act is Occupational Health and Safety Act, Act 85 of 1993. Now this slide, slides that we have given you, basically gives an overview of the areas that are relevant and important to your particular sector. So for our inspectors, I want to repeat, our work is basically encompassed in relation to inspections, enforcement, and advocacy. You'll find that we do get involved in each one of those areas. From an advocacy point, of course, we try to raise awareness and do a certain amount of education in terms of the work that we perform now. The work we do is all labor laws, except those that I mentioned. So it's the Basic Conditions of Employment Act, Employment Equity Act, UI, which is the unemployment compensation, and occupational health and safety. So those are the aspects that we cover. And you'll find that also in our annual reports that we reflect on those things. We also reflect on our inspections and the different sectors that we cover. So what are some of the challenges that we have with regard to these sectors? Firstly, I'd like to cover the period that we're in with regard to the COVID period that we entered into on the 27th of March last year. What is quite significant is that there was no real change between what has taken place prior to COVID in terms of enforcement and what has happened after COVID. So we find the sector, the hospitality sector and the food and beverage sector, broadly speaking, hover at a compliance rate of between 50 and 56%, which is not even close to the desired compliance rate that one would anticipate. So the situation that you have is you could find that the tourist sector is having to go and answer for non-compliance issues in the courts because of the fact that they don't comply on the first inspection, and effectively they don't comply on a second inspection. Hence, the need to prosecute when you have that type of environment. Now, when we spoke about COVID a moment ago, what happened was there was a direction that was issued, and there were subsequent directions after the first one, and the last one being brought out or published in June this year. And at every step of the way, every sector was given the detail for compliance. In other words, nobody needed to wonder about how they're going to comply, what compliance is. The legislation itself was quite clear through the direction. Nevertheless, as I've indicated throughout the period where we monitored on a monthly basis almost, we found that compliance did not move substantially over the months that I've indicated up to now. So that is, of course, a major concern for us. The next item would be on consultants. Certain industries are relying heavily on consultants to assist them with complying with the labor laws. And we find in a number of instances that these consultants are not worth the salt, or their weight in gold, if you like, because of the compliance levels that we are finding out there. So there is a serious challenge with regard to the consultants that are being utilized in the tourist sector, where employers are in fact trying to use the consultants to assist them with compliance. So that is a factor that would need to be dealt with. The issue of foreigners has been sufficiently dealt with. Suffice it to say that inspections and enforcement services over the years have done various, they do normally inspections, and then they also do blitz inspections, and they'll do inspections where it is integrated with other government departments such as Home Affairs and also the South African Police Service, especially where it's anticipated that there could be illegal foreigners operating in that particular sector. So last week we went out to the road freight industry, and at one of the companies there we were with the police and the Home Affairs departments, and the SAPS made an arrest on the spot with regard to an illegal foreigner that was found on the premises. The point I'm making is that we don't effect arrests as the Department of Employment and Labor. We work with other government departments closely in ensuring that there is compliance across the board, and that where action must be taken, the appropriate authorities there. Now, if they're not there, we are in a position to get in touch with them due to relationships that are formed at a provincial level with regard to these various parties. So without belaboring the issue, Chairperson, as I've indicated, the legislation we cover, the model that we use, and also the fact that we operate jointly with other.
I'm not sure if it's only me who's losing your presentation now.
Continue doing the work and also educating the public as we go along with regard to what we do. In a nutshell, Chair, thank you very much, and I remain available for questions. Thank you.
Is there any other presentation?
Advocate Yawa. Thank you very much, Honorable Chairperson, members of the committee, Deputy Minister, leader of our delegation, Dilijwi Morotova, and everybody, good morning. Mr. Tejane is going to do the real interventions in terms of our attempts at job preservations and so on in that sector. But just to bring to the committee's attention in relation to compliance and what headaches, if any, we are receiving from the sector. The major headache, Chair, and the committee, and perhaps which the policy is going to address, but between now and the time the policy addresses that, we are at a headache with the Auditor General in the sense that this sector is amongst the sectors that tend to, as DDG Morotova said, employ people who come from not South Africa, and some of them will not have come to South Africa through the proper channels. Now, Auditor General, in the context of UIF, in terms of the UIF Act, if the employer insures those people with UIF, we tend to be less focused on whether the person is in the country legally or illegally, because the UIF Act simply asks the question, is this person a contributor? In other words, has this person been paid for by their employer? Is there an employer-employee relationship? And if we answer those in the affirmative, then we shall have insured the person. And then if there is time for benefits, we have to pay those benefits. But Auditor General is going beyond that point into saying they are instructed in law as a Chapter 9 institution to strengthen the constitutional democracy. Now, if constitutional democracy is founded on the rule of law, then anybody who's not operating legally, they are almost saying, UIF, why are you honoring contributions from these people and also paying them benefits in the event that they are unemployed and so on and so forth. So that matter needs to be focused on, and the portfolio committee has got a role as it relates with the sector to regulate those kinds of relationships that the entire system of the country, being one government, those that must go through Home Affairs have to do so. And then through that, they come to UIF, and then UIF dispenses whatever they need to dispense to them. The last point, Chair, that I'll just raise, and then Mr. Tejana will take us through, is the point that in the extension of coverage and making sure that all employers contribute for their employees, because we've discovered during the TERS, the temporary relief schemes in the face of the lockdowns, that some employers, including in this sector, would register far fewer of its employees and have a whole lot of them uninsured. And when a disaster like we had occurred, we started to see even those of them who had insured, that they insured far less than the number. And then, of course, there were a whole lot of them also who did not insure a single person. And one of what we then are working on with the inspection division, like the Inspector General just presented now, is to work on mechanisms to up compliance, whether by the advocacies or inspections or those other mechanisms, so that we have every worker covered by every employer contributing in UIF, so that should moments of need occur, whether it's retrenchment, just a job loss, maternity, whatever you call it, regardless of who you are, as long as you're a worker, that we should be able to respond to that. But the thorny part is the one I started with, that AG is beginning to ask a question. Why are you also going beyond those who are legally here? And that is a matter that we are trying to navigate. Chair, with your permission, I could then allow Mr. Tejana on the screen that is already on the presentation that is already on the screen to just take us in the context of the labor activation programs that we are following. Thank you very much, Chair.
Okay.
May I proceed, Chair? Good morning, Chair and members of Portfolio Committee, the Deputy Minister, Mr. Muratova, Ms. Advocate Yawa, and all the other colleagues. May I proceed, Chair?
Yes, you may.
Thank you. Thank you so much. I'm glad, Chair, that some of the assumptions that I came with have already been dealt with. For example, the fact that the committee is aware that in 2010, the Skills Development Act moved to higher education. Therefore, matters pertaining to training in particular has moved to higher education. And also the fact that the Department of Labor has transformed into Department of Employment and Labor. And the trajectory of the department is that of now facilitating job creation. And those are some of the discussions that the Deputy Minister and the Minister would have with ourselves and other government departments, specifically when it comes to intergovernmental collaboration. And my presentation will also premise on that. The mandate, or rather the latitude or the scope that I was provided, was to talk to the basket of services that the Labor Activation Program is a catalyst of the Department of Employment and Labor in facilitating an environment conducive for job creation in collaboration with other government departments. So I'll be talking to the three components, but I think what is important is just to talk to introduction, which I'll deal with now, legislative mandate that governs the environment within which we operate and then go to the objectives. And then I'll probably give more weight on training of the unemployed, which we call employability. But I'll also talk to the normal TERS. We call it normal TERS because we have the COVID-19 TERS, so the CCMA TERS. And then I'll talk to the work that is done by Productivity South Africa. So in a nutshell, Chair and Portfolio Committee members, we all know that the Unemployment Insurance Fund, which is operating as an insurance, took a decision rather to introduce labor activation program, specifically to reintroduce what we call beneficiaries or contributors that would have lost their jobs, to reintegrate them back into the world of work into the job market. This particular program called LAP, Labor Activation Program, was then in 2010 introduced at a very small scale, just to check and test how it's going to work and to what extent it will be able to work. So it was basically produced as a pilot then. However, over a few years, 7 or so years, the targets were then increased as by the discussion that was taken by the executive committee to consider high level unemployment, given the statistics that was produced by Statistics South Africa at that point. Then the decision was taken to say, look, how do we then ensure that we get more people back into job? Instead of just paying out the retrenchment packages and whatever, we needed to get people back into work so that they can then be able to contribute, which will then be beneficial to collecting revenue for the institution. Ms. Matabuka, you may move to the next slide, which will then talk to the legislative mandate. Basically, in terms of the legislative mandate, I'm just basically outlining three sections just to contextualize the environment within which we work, specifically Section 48 of the UI Act, where it basically talks to the board having that mandate to advise the minister on policies to minimize unemployment and basically to create schemes to elevate effects of unemployment. You'll notice that I'm talking employment schemes because when the Demorotoba or Public Employment Services as well, within the Employment Services Act, they also speak of employment schemes. And basically our job is to create an environment or behave and operate as a catalyst towards assisting the achievement of those employment schemes. So the board will then advise the minister of those particular schemes, having looked into the environment, having looked at the government priorities, having looked at and identifying critical economies and also sectors or environments that are in distress, be it rural areas, be it peri-urban or peripheral areas in terms of our economy and society. So basically to balance the tripartite alliance between the polity, the economy, and civil society. So those schemes will then deal with those particular aspects. Then Section 18 of the Act, the Director General may refer UIF beneficiaries for vocational training as precondition to qualify for unemployment benefits. Now, when the Labor Activation Program started, we had entered into, that is now going back to 2010, up until I think 2017, 2019, we had entered into MOAs, specifically with sector education training authorities, specifically to work on training of the beneficiaries or those that are out of work so that they can then be capacitated with skills for them to be able to fend for themselves in the world of work, basically training them to get certificates so that they can then be able to get into those jobs. Currently and lately, that trajectory has now changed, and I'll talk to it when I talk to areas relating to employability. Section 5D in particular, it basically emphasizes the fact that the funds must be used to finance retention of contributors in employment and the re-entry of contributors into the labor market. That is where then we find the issues relating to the normal TERS that is adjudicated at the CCMA, which I'll talk to just now, If you recall, in 2018, the Job Summit, there were about, I think, 77 projects that came out of that. And there was also a resolution or a decision that was taken that companies in distress will be assisted through what was then called layoff scheme. A decision was taken that this layoff scheme will then be managed or administered at the CCMA because of those companies that are undergoing Section 189 of the LRA, which we now call TERS. So basically, those funds will then be used for that, and also companies in distress. Now, in terms of the next slide, where we're talking about the objectives, the intention is just to outline the objectives of the labor activation program as it stands. So if you move to slide five, where we're talking objectives of the labor activation program, one is to enhance employability. Now, before, we used to call it training of the unemployed. But because of the repackaging of the Department of Labor to the Department of Employment and Labor, where we're saying labor activation program then becomes a catalyst towards creating a conducive environment for beneficiaries or contributors to reintegrate it into the world of work. Then we say we are creating employability. These contributors must have the ability and capability to be employed. So we're enhancing employability of the unemployed through training of the unemployed. Now, in terms of training of the unemployed, there are two ways that we can get them back into work. One, they can go through training because we are now recognizing the 21st century, which requires fourth industrial revolution in indices, mechanization, artificial intelligence. So we are saying then we need to ensure that in terms of enhancing our own economy, they need to have those particular skills. So therefore, they can go through skills training, be it learnerships or skills programs or enterprise development or entrepreneur development, or they can be absorbed directly into jobs by those employers whilst they then, you know, reconfigured and whatever. So that's very important, that particular program of employability, which I'll touch on again. Then we also enable entrepreneurship through enterprise development. The argument is simply that we are not necessarily looking at all citizens of South Africa becoming employees or workers. We also need for those who are also going to be able to create jobs or create enterprises for them to be able to then.
I'm losing you. I'm not sure if it's my phone or my connectivity challenges.
I also can't hear here.
It's not only you, Chair.
I want to tell
you, Advocate Yawa, you can take over the presentation and summarize. Yes.
Indeed, that's what I was doing, delegation leader. Chair, until Mr. Tidona is back, the objectives of the program are to enhance employability. Here, we're trying to
Recording in progress.
Into MOAs in terms of how we collaborate and work together. And I'm aware that periodically when I talk to the minister, he also informs me that he's talking to a number of ministers. I know he's been talking to the Minister of Tourism as well, insofar collaborations are concerned. So those companies or those interested parties will then submit their proposals to the National Adjudication Committee, which is an independent body that adjudicates their programs, but they submit now through a portal that we call jobcreation.initiatives@labor.gov.za. This is a new way of doing things. Before, proposals used to be handed by hand to our officials in the office, and that used to be a program that was a bit cumbersome and with its challenges. So they submit through that portal, and then the officials that are responsible for employability will then ensure that the National Adjudication Committee for Labor Activation Program sits, adjudicate the proposals, and then they then engage those that would have submitted the proposals, and if they are happy, they then conduct what we call due diligence. Eventually, after the due diligence and everything is in order, is done, then they will then recommend to the accounting authority. The accounting authority will be the director general in the context of the URF, who will then eventually approve. After approving that particular proposal, then a letter will then be issued to the potential funded partner. And then after they've received the letter, they will be engaged with a draft funding agreement. And then a draft, the funding agreement subsequent to it being signed, then an implementation plan is then finalized, and then the project kickstart, and the officials will then have initial meetings and then set up certain committees, steering committees for that particular project. And then the project will then be monitored, and then it will be evaluated eventually when it finishes. But in the meantime, during the monitoring process, the company or the funded partner will then have to submit invoices with portfolio of evidence that is in line with the funding agreement, that is in line with the implementation plan, and then that will then be paid accordingly. But also what is important, because we also take note that our participants will not necessarily have sufficient funds to be able to travel between training sites and websites and what have you. The first tranche, we call it the first tranche, is paid out for stipends specifically, so that the stipends can be paid to the funded partner in advance, so that they can be able to hand over to the learners for them to be able to travel to the world of to the workplaces and the training sites. Now, currently, there's a point that we're emphasizing, and if potential funded partners do not satisfy this, it becomes difficult for us to entertain their proposals. We are then saying now, because we're interested in people getting into decent jobs, part of the requirement in terms of the proposal is that the funded partners must submit commitment letters from employers confirming that participants will be employed post the lab intervention. And this is different from the normal learnership agreement, where you have a learner, an employer, and a training provider coming into a learnership agreement, and the employer there provides experiential learning. This is not experiential learning. It's actual absorption into job subsequent to finishing, be it a learnership or a skills program. If there's no such commitment, we have challenges with it. We do acknowledge that an employer might say, I'm going to absorb 5,000 for argument's sake. We do acknowledge there are those kind of risks in terms of the economy, but big bottom line is that subsequent to finishing the project, they must be absorbed into jobs. We may move to the next slide so that I can move past. I think I've already touched on that intervention may be anything, training or workplace readiness or absorption directly. The employer requires employees to undergo before they can be appointed. Such interventions and and expectation is that participants will be absorbed into the jobs post-funding. I think I've indicated that. There's also an important aspect that says there must be a signing of contracts to effect to this commitment. Now, if there are no signed contracts, obviously, we cannot enforce. The contract will reflect that if the candidates are not absorbed, the funding must be paid back. Now, what we've done in terms of our funding agreements, we've then taken our funding agreements to our legal department to try and reconfigure it to ensure that any risk or gaps are closed. So we reserve the right to demand the money back if the training that was confirmed as going to absorb participants into decent jobs does not happen. Therefore, we reserve the right to demand the money back. Now, the contract will reflect that if candidates are not absorbed, we pay back the money. You can move to slide 9. Like any other training program or initiative that seeks to capacitate participants, the department pays a stipend to learners during the funding period. If there's training, project management as well, tools of trade and PPEs. And I think I must mention that we are also having certain considerations now insofar as project management is concerned. We are now more interested in employers that will then absorb participant direct so that we can see how best we can cut the middle person, because we've then realized that most of all of the money seems to be going to project management as well. So we are dealing with that particular matter. We are also, based on our discussions with Department of Higher Education and Training, we've met with the minister, both our minister and the Minister of Higher Education and officials there to say, moving forward in terms of our collaboration, the Department of Employment and Labor will be paying towards employability. Department of Higher Training, the CETAs in particular, because we also met with the CEOs of the CETAs, that they will pay that they are responsible for, which is training. So that's how we're moving forward, as it were. We've also picked up that a lot of training providers that are submitting proposals, instead of addressing those proposals that are purely training to the CETAs, they are submitting them to us, and we then divert them directly to that. And we are interested in those, as I've indicated, that are basically about employability. Because we picked up that we cannot just be paying for the sake of pay. Training is not our forte. We have made peace with the fact that Skills Development Act now sits with higher education. Therefore, in the ambit of public employment services, we need to then deal with issues relating to employability. Now, the next few slides, in summary, are just representing or reflecting specifically programs or projects that have been adjudicated by the National Adjudication Committee that are specifically in the tourism environment or sector. We have more, but we just lifted this one specifically for this purpose. So those are the ones that are recommended for funding through Labor Activation Program. And we've got one in KZN, it's called Summit, in KZN and Gauteng. And then we've got one in the Eastern Cape called Jupiloc Consulting. So they are basically providing projects within the tourism sector. We've just given a spectrum of the programs that they will be taking care of. If you look at Summit for year one, it's going to be over 3 years. Maybe let me just summarize it in that way. So Summit is over 3 years, which is basically 2022, 23, 24. You'll notice out of the five for 2022, which is the first year, there's assistant chefs, cook convenience, fast food, table attendant, barista. We've got about 1,500 learners or participants in all of those for that particular year. And the duration is about 50 months. So when you go to Summit year two, 1,500 as well, learners. And then for the third year, the number increases to about, that is slide 13, Ms. Matabuke, it's about 2,000 of those learners that would have gone through the program. And then with on slide 14, you'll notice that we're talking tour guides, craft enterprise, food prep and cooking, hospitality, entrepreneurship, and then there we're talking 550. So basically the intention, Chair and Portfolio Committee members, was just to give an indication in terms of what is that we are doing in terms of labor activation program across all sectors. However, insofar tourism is concerned, that's what we're dealing with. And we are hoping that with our engagement with different government departments, insofar intergovernmental collaboration is concerned, we will then be linked with specific officials in the tourism department that will then engage with ourselves to the effect that we can then put all the projects that they have from their side on the table and see how best we can share resources. Because I think when we enter into MOAs, it becomes easier when we say you've got 40 million for argument's sake, we've got 30 million or we've got 40 million. How do we ensure that we pool these financial resources together to have more people into the system and have more people getting into the world of work? Advocate Yawa, that's the long and short of the preparation in so far labor activation program is concerned. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Mr. Tedron. DDG, as a leader, I think that's the last presentation, as you said, we must do. Can we hand over to you and then you interact with the committee?
DDG? Thank you very much, Advocate Yawa. I don't know if there's anything from, I must delegate upwards from the DM, but we are done, Chairperson. We can entertain questions. Unless the DM wants to make some comments. Thank you.
Oh, thank you very much for the presentation. Members, honorable members of the Portfolio Committee meeting, I would love you to pose some questions and any clarification questions. And they must actually be deriving from the presentation that you've been listening. Thank you very much. Can I get members, or I will have to call members as they reflect on our list. I will start with Honorable Mutega. Honorable Mteka, we are not audible. Maybe if you can just try to.
I've got only one.
Okay.
Ladies and in general, coming from. Am I audible now?
Country,
yes, you are.
In general, is having a concern of cheap labor, mostly the workers coming outside South Africa, the employed workers. So I think wages, they are paid lower.
Honorable Mutaka, excuse me, just try to. Honorable Mutaka, we are not audible at all. May I request that maybe you write your question
on our chat board, maybe we can be able to get what we want to say right now, because we cannot hear anything for now. But I hear your question is about the cheap labor, but going forward, I could Honorable Teka, can you write your question on the board since we cannot hear you and we can be able to hear what you want to say?
Thank you, Chairperson. I read it up, but it was about cheap labor, which is preferred over South Africans. Thank you.
Thank you very much. You are clearer now. Can you go to the next member, Honorable Member Wickler?
Thank you, Chairperson. And thank you to the presenters. My only concern is the slightly xenophobic undertone of questioning why employment in the sector seems to be skewed towards foreign nationals. I think that anyone that is legally in the country that has the relevant documentation and that is willing to work and is a hard worker should have access to employment. And I don't think they should be penalized because they come from the SADC region or from the rest of Africa. I think we need to engender unity with our African counterparts. And I'm just worried that there is a xenophobic leaning and we must guard against that, I think, in all our initiatives. Thank you.
Then thank you very much, Honorable Winkler. Honorable Makubela.
Honorable. Thank you,
Chairperson. We are struggling to hear you as well.
Can you hear me?
I think you need to make some movement. Maybe we can hear you.
Honorable Chair.
Yes, I can hear you now.
Hello.
We can hear you now.
My network, I will write on the chat. My network is not stable.
Okay, they will read it from the chat. Thank you.
Yes, I say I will write on the chat.
Yes, ma'am. Thank you very much, Honorable.
Okay.
Honorable,
thank you very much, Chairperson.
Honorable Kweko?
Mine is just to appreciate the presentation and the report that is given by the
Is that Honorable Clark was speaking? I can't hear anything. Honorable Sizo, you are going to write on the board, am I correct? I thought it's supposed to be Honorable Clark.
Yes, Chair, I'm here. Do you hear me now?
Yes, you are very clear, ma'am.
Yes, it's unfortunate that the other members are experiencing this network connection. I may be lucky today, Chair. Chairperson, let me first start by appreciating the fact that the delegation is led by Deputy Minister have honored our invitation. We appreciate that. There is a lot that we have observed in their presentation. Their presentation also reminds us that the influx that we see in South Africa is not only as a result of our borders being porous, it's also about other role players not playing their role. And Chair, what we have learned out of the COVID-19 requires us all to come up with the interventions and solutions to job losses and job creation, Chair. That was me in passing, Chairperson. We are also reminded, Chair, of an interministerial committee that has been established by the President. At some stage, Chairperson, we will appreciate if that interministerial committee can account to Parliament, because the problems that we are facing as a country require that interministerial committee report so that we can take it from there. Chairperson, what we observe in provinces like Cape Town, where if you visit a garage, you see that most portrait attendants are foreign nationals. You ask yourself some questions. If I may say out, Chair, the questions that I ask myself, are these people documented? Do they enjoy benefits? Do they offer a particular skill than other South Africans seeking job in the area? Are there monitors from the Department of Labor to see to it that these people are not exploited? Chairperson, if one is working or offering work in a particular organization or institution, that particular person must be protected, even if that person is a foreign national. We are as a committee guarding against that. Chairperson, I heard that there was a research conducted by the department. What interests me is the fact that is reflecting there that foreign nationals are offering better language than foreign language than any other person here in South Africa. That poses a challenge to us as a committee chair to identify other languages that are in demand, as we have done with regards to Mandarin. That means, Chair, we cannot point fingers to the department only. We must also point fingers to ourselves. What is it that we are doing? Are we making enough research as tourism so that we are able to skill our people so that the market can attract them, can also attract them, not attracting foreign nationals only. But you ask yourself a big question. Are these people documented? Because if they are not, the Department of Home Affairs, the Department, the SAPS, International Relations, must also play their role, Chair, so that we are able to avoid any instability that may be caused by vulnerability of our people in South Africa. Chairperson, I got it from the media that Statistics SA will soon be releasing some statistics on employment and jobs. I don't think we are going to get a positive report. But let me not predict, Chair. Let's wait and see. But we must collectively take responsibility of what is happening here in our country, Chair. The point that I want to raise to the department is the importance, Chair, of compliance monitoring and enforcement of labor laws. If we can do that, Chair, at least other challenges that we have may be prevented. Otherwise, we thank them for coming and making this presentation. It is an eye-opener. We will also, as a committee, have a way forward after this meeting, Chairperson. That I recommend that we craft a way forward. If it means we must invite other role players, so be it, Chairperson. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much, Honorable Tleko. Honorable Hlanganani Gombi.
Good morning, Chairperson. Thank you very much for me for the presentation, which was insightful. I don't have any questions at this moment.
Thank you very much, Honorable Gombi. Honorable De Freitas. Is Honorable De Freitas in the meeting? If not so, I pass to Honorable Mbushe.
Thank you, Honorable Chairperson. Good morning, Honorable DM, Honorable members, and the departmental officials, Chair. Chair, I wish to welcome and appreciate the presentations done. They were quite comprehensive and eye-opener. Firstly, I wish to say I also have noted the issue that was raised by Honorable Clerk that we need to get a presentation from the Interministerial Committee on Migration, their terms of reference and the work that they have done so far. Secondly, Chair, I think as a committee, we need to make a follow-up on the bills to be processed by Parliament to address some of the needs that have been tabled by the DDG. Also, Chairperson, my question then will be on the issue that has to do with the fact that we only have, they only have one company within the tourism sector, of which it still awaits an award. Is this based on the lack of awareness, or are there any underlying reasons such that there is only one company that is to benefit from this program that they have presented? Also, Chairperson, on the preserved jobs and temporary employer-employee relief scheme for companies in distress, do they have any awareness programs so that most companies in distress could be able to benefit from the scheme? Lastly, Chairperson, I also wish to get a sense from the Department of Labor and Employment on the UFTEL's program with tourism. Do they have any knowledge of fraudulent claims on the UFTEL scheme from the tourism sector? I think that will be all for now, Chairperson.
Thank you very much, Honorable Mbushe. Honorable April? Honorable April?
Chair?
Oh, yes, Honorable Mbushe?
While you're still waiting for Honorable April, I have this one question that I forgot. How does the Department of Labor and Employment measure the effectiveness of these training programs provided by the department for tourism? I'm raising this, Chair, because in my constituency, we visited the Department of Labor there, and the DM responsible showed less interest on the learnerships and all the other programs that are there, because he was raising the fact that they are not effective based on the beneficiaries lacking a will of consistency. in terms of ensuring that they complete the course. Their only focus is on the incentives that they are getting from the programs. Thanks, Chair.
Thank you very much, Honorable Boucher. Honorable April, I don't think he's on the platform now. Honorable Mieni. Honorable Mieni. If it's not the Honorable Katamabala Sithole. Honorable Katamabala Sithole. If not, if Honorable Katamabala Sithole is not here, I'm not sure if I'm leaving anyone behind before I can come in. Any member who still wants to say something about the presentation? Okay. I am now coming in just to get few questions, just to pose few questions here. Honourable members, my first question here is about the Department of Labour and the LGCTAS, which are providing training to the communities that need training. I'm happy that it is still there, and the Department of the Department of Higher Education through its local government CTAS are providing such trainings. But during the COVID-19, maybe the inception of the COVID-19, that is from last year, we had a lot of LGCTA trainings collapsing due to COVID-19. And that actually made a lot of contracts to expire before the completion of those trainings. And we find that most of those learners who are depending on the stipend for that training do not get those stipends any longer, because the contract has expired and the service providers cannot give any stipends any longer. Mm-hmm. What was the intervention of the Department of Labor to that effect? Because I think they should be working together to do that and to ensure that the trainings are reinstated so that the programs can continue and be completed by those learners. My other question, that is my first question. My other question that I would like to find out here is about, you know, as you, and one of the people said, I think it's a DDG, who said people, it's not easy for the people to disclose their status. I believe that when you do your inspection in the establishment, you need to check the, registration, whether the company registered its employees, and also for UIF and for workmen's compensation. I didn't hear you mentioning the workmen's compensation. That actually is the insurance that pays you when in case there's an injury on duty. So I didn't hear you talking about that. Is that one of your department's responsibility to ensure that there is workmen's compensation and compliance at workplace, and also compliance of the establishment in terms of the health and occupational safety? I heard you talking about it. And also the HIV and AIDS policy that it's actually put on the walls, and to ensure that there is actually compliance on the HIV and AIDS policies. And now I think we have the ones that is adding the COVID-19 compliance at workplace. I didn't hear you mentioning that, and which is very important for the establishment. Also, there are some establishments in the tourism sector where you find that
unregistered owners have their hotels as well as the bed and breakfast, which are not compliant in terms of that Occupational Health and Safety Regulations Act of 85 of 1993. And you find that they are just doing what they like, especially here in our main CBDs of Johannesburg, where you find they are not compliant in terms of health regulations, health and safety regulations. And I sometimes go there and find out if we, do they get inspections from the Labor Department to check if they are compliant in order to avoid the disasters. And you find that nothing like that has been happening. I don't know if those structures have collapsed or they're still available. You find that they are also affecting the economy, because as they are illegal operating companies in the tourism sector, they don't pay tax for what they are collecting because they are not registered. And the employees whom they have employed are also not registered, and they don't contribute maybe that a little bit of tax which they are supposed to pay as they pay as you earn. So it is something that we find that the economy of this country is collapsing due to the dysfunctional, some of the sectors in the Labor Department are not functional, and they are actually crippling the economy of the country due to the fact that they are hiding people who are making money from the country, but not they're paying the same taxes to our government, and also consuming our rates and taxes, collapsing our municipalities because they're illegal and they're not known, and they cannot be traced who are those consumers of those park services from our municipalities. So we have double non-payment to employee and employer due to their undocumentation and unregistered members of this business owners. Yes, it is true that the foreign nationals are distorting the labor market. And what is the department's plan? What is the department's plan to improve the unemployment in the tourism sector and in the entire South Africa? Because we cannot just leave things like this and continue to observe things that are not resolved by the relevant department, which is the Department of Labor. Closing the borders may also not be able to assist alone. That cannot alone assist, but enforcing the labor regulations and policies will be able to make do something. Those who are not compliant as employers, they need to be reprimanded. They need, at least I know you are saying that there is an insufficient and absent policy framework concerning recruitment. But what are you doing about it? Are you just leaving it like that, or you are going to draft it after we have maybe, right now we have 50% of the population unemployed. South African population unemployed. Maybe we need to do something before we even go to the greater number than what we are having right now. So I am worried about that we have these challenges, and I don't see us having a plan or anything that we are being promised here to say this is what we are going to do from here. We are just told about challenges. That we have people that are not supposed to be working in this country, but they are working. And we are talking about closing the borders, which is not the only solution, but enforcement of those establishments. It does not have to be people to disclose their status, but your visit on site can actually reveal the status of the employee and the employer.
I'm still on the floor, honorable members. There is a notion that says people, we are looking for people who are having the skills, you know, the foreign language that the sector requests. You know, honorable members, my worry is that I know very well our Department of Tourism is working very hard to skill our people. We have every skill training that is needed in the tourism sector. But I find that those members are not actually recognized in the sector after they get proper training of what is required. There is now training that we don't provide through our tourism sector. So there is no reason why we should get people who are having the skill that we are is even less than our own skills that we require in our country. I don't believe in the skill part of it. So because we do have Ebome Majitonki in our tourism who are training people for development, training and development in the tourism sector from tour guide and up to the chefs. So I'm worried about that as an excuse to have those people in the sector. I think I will pause from there. I will pause the members, and maybe if we can have some responses from the department, we will be happy to hear from them. Thank you. Over to you, department.
Thank you very much, Honorable Chairperson. I think.
Excuse me, sorry, I forgot one point. My apology. There are some legislated wage acts that are in place, and those ones are sufficient enough to actually make a follow up on and or play an oversight as the Department of Labor. I want to find out if are you able to deal with this issue when coming to those foreign national people when they are being underpaid by those employers, and also those unfair dismissals of those people who are not having any representation when coming to their right to be represented. And also, do you get such complaints from them, and what do you do about them? Do you just dismiss them because they are not registered, or what do you do? You know, some of the people, they will say, I went to work and I'm told that I'm no longer required to be at work. No compensation, nothing. And also, there was one question which I want to get clarity here from you. Companies like casinos. Casino also fall under terrorism and tourism, I can say that. Those people who've been there for more than 20 years working in those casinos, they are now told that due to COVID-19, they cannot longer be permanent workers, and they are now turned into part-time workers after 20 years. Is that allowed, according to the labor law, to turn a person of 20 years to be now a part-time worker without any procedural, but automatically like that? That is my question that I wanted to find out from you. Thank you very much. Honorable Mpushe, you wanted to say something. Can you come in? Honorable Mpushe, I saw something that you wanted to ask. And you.
No, it's a historical hand, my chairperson.
Okay, thank you very much. You, department, come in, please. Thank you.
Okay, chairperson, we're going to try and answer the questions in the following manner. I'll come in on the questions that relates to policy, and then I'll ask Ms. Ramlongo to come in on the research-related questions. Mr. Zana will come in on the questions that relates to inspections, and then there were a whole range of questions that relates to assistance and the UIF. That Advocate Diawa and Mr. Tejan will come in. Now, just on the first question, what are we bringing to you? Honorable Chairperson, I said we have worked on a policy We have also worked on the amendment bill because we realized that there was deficiency in the current act. And what I've outlined is the work that has been done up to now, the presentations that were made to cabinet, and the work that we are still doing, which will culminate in parliament, I mean, cabinet, formally releasing the policy and the proposed amendment bill that is going to go to the public, and from there on, we will refer it to parliament for you to pass the necessary legislation. We're a constitutional country, and we had to follow, unfortunately, all those processes. We would have loved to be speeded up, but unfortunately, we were forced to say you have to follow all those processes before legislation comes to parliament. So the first presentation is essentially about a law that is going to address that problem. But I was able to also say, Honorable Chairperson, that this is just one part. It needs to be complemented by legislation from Home Affairs. And I did indicate that Home Affairs is currently reviewing the Citizenship Act because there are a lot of deficiencies. The Refugees Act and the current Immigration Act. We have had a number of cases where Home Affairs was taken to court by either the rights groups, international bodies, and other people, and the courts, even though we lost, pronounced on the kind of actions that as government we're supposed to take. And all the things that I've outlined are based on the court decisions, and we're trying to address them. There was a question on whether what we are doing is bordering on xenophobic. Chairperson, we did say that in the policy, we're trying to balance four very difficult issues. One is that you cannot ignore the continued loud noise from the South Africans that manage migration because it is resulting in all sorts of problems. When there are riots and all this blockade, address this. These things are going to emerge. There are those who benefit from this process. Let us be frank about this. They see nothing wrong. They see nothing wrong in underpaying the foreign nationals. They see nothing wrong because they treat them as because they believe they don't have rights. They see nothing wrong because they don't believe that they are full human beings like you and I, and so on. And we also are working with Home Affairs to ensure that there are very, very stiff penalties for anyone that is found employing a foreign national without the necessary documentation. And this is common across the world. It's not that any sovereign country, when it implements and protects its laws, it becomes xenophobic. It's only people who benefit from the practice that will label anything that we do. You cannot go to Zimbabwe just next door or in Swaziland and do as you please. As members of parliament, as officials of government, we know that. But why would it be possible for other foreign nationals to come to South Africa and do as they please when there are laws that you have passed in parliament that must be respected? We can blame the police, but they need to be strengthened. We can blame the inspectors. They need support from people such as yourself in the work that we are doing. I'm going to ask briefly Ms. Ramlongo to comment on the research, except to also address the question of compensation. All labor laws currently in the country protect anyone, irrespective of their status, documented, undocumented, or irregular. The only problem is the alignment where a person is found and they have not been paid the necessary living wage or minimum wage, the law requires that we go back to the date they started. TIBO will talk to this issue. Inspectors will normally calculate. The employer is supposed to pay all those wages. The only problem that we face is the alignment, where the person who benefited, once the case is reported, they know that Home Affairs will not waste time in deporting the person. So when the case gets to court, it gets thrown out because of evidence, lack of evidence, because the person or the complainant is no longer in the country, and that case cannot be pursued. On the other hand, if the Home Affairs person keeps that person, we know the legal system takes long. A case may take very long before it appears. There are issues around having to take care of that person or release them to go and either look for another job whilst we know that they were irregular in the country, and it becomes a problem. So that is why we're trying to align our processes to say, can we have speedy prosecution by the time the person is deported, they have also benefited. We welcome the idea, Honorable Chairperson and members, that you call individual departments, just like you did to us, so that they can begin to account to you on the work that they are doing insofar as their department is concerned. For instance, the Department of Justice has got a lot of issues around language, around speedy prosecution, around making sure that people receive justice in the language that they understand, representation, around protection against xenophobia, etc. I can count all the 12 departments that are part of the IMC. The president was very sure when he called all of them to come together, because he knows, and I think it has been the understanding from cabinet, that every department has got a stake. Department of Tourism is also sitting with us in the IMC because they've got a whole range of issues that they must contribute. Let me allow Ms. Ramlongo to come in on research issues, and then TBOS, and then Advocate Yao. Ms. Ramlongo.
Thanks, Ms. Ramlongo. Thank you, Chairperson. I can only add that our research findings are unfortunately pointing us to loopholes that are existing in the labor market. As Mr. Morotola indicated, the aim of now us introducing the National Labor Migration Policy is to tighten those loopholes that are being exploited, unfortunately, at the expense of workers, and in this case, migrant workers, and to some extent, our own South African workers who are unable to enter the labor market because foreign migrants are found to be more usable than South African. So the issue of, if I can just point at the language issue, we find it as just an excuse, really, to give us reasons why we can't take South Africans. And I singled that one out. There are many other excuses. For example, we have findings that show that South Africans are lazy. You have heard about those previously. And these are things that are not acceptable. It's only because when we get migrant laborers, they can work as much or they can go beyond working hours without complaining. Linking it to the response given by Mr. Morotova on xenophobia. When they work without complaining, these migrants, it's because also to the fact that they are not documented. And when they go to complain to their employers, it's either the police are called. We had a situation where we had that come month end when they're supposed to be paid, police are called in to say, I've got illegal migrants in my employment area. So it's for us to allow the committee to note that all these things of employing undocumented migrants is basically for exploitation of maximizing the benefits of the business at the expense of what the migrant workers are getting. Our laws, as Mr. Sanna indicated, are there to cover everyone, regardless of their nationality. So I think for me, the research is just showing us the areas where tightening needs to happen, and we are busy tightening. I wanted to cite the amendments that were made to the labor relations that prohibit contracting, which talks now to the casino story, even though that one maybe can be responded to by UIF as to why casino workers with that long working time frame are converted now to contracts. Labor relations was amended to prohibit employers to put people in contracts for more than 3 months, because we have seen that contracts are employees are put in contracts and they're extended just to avoid taking responsibility of ensuring that they have all the benefits that decent work wants them to have. So it's all about exploitation, Chairperson, and the department is working very hard to try to close those loopholes. Thank you.
Mr. Vanna. Tuba is still there. No, we seem to have lost Mr. Tibo, but I think there were a number of inspections related. He did point out the fact that we do run joint inspections. Currently, the department has about 1,500 inspectors, and Home Affairs has 700. Now, you need to just check the number of companies that exist. We know that the issues of capacity, whilst we raise them, members will say, find innovative ways. And we are doing a lot in that area to try and introduce things like self-inspection to reward those companies that are going all out of their way to ensure that there's compliance. We also engage the services of other inspectorate companies that have been accredited by us to assist us in doing inspections in their area and so on. Obviously, there are still challenges that we cannot cover the entire length and breadth of our country. The display of boards so that employees know their rights is something that remains that is checked during inspections, and some companies would normally not comply, and that is why he was talking about prosecutions. We also have challenges in the relations with the Department of Justice, in that some cases referred to will take long, and some employers would then tend to think that the labor laws do not bite. I think we have noticed the number of unregistered owners of hotels and B&Bs, but let me also indicate to members that when you conduct inspections, there are certain protocols that are normally observed. You don't just go in and raid companies. Only when we do joint operations with police and there are reasonable grounds to believe that the employer is not cooperating with Home Affairs, in those instances, we'll do a raid, and that's where we will enter premises without the necessary paperwork. But when you have to do normal inspection, you have to set up an appointment, you have to get the employer to be there, and to be able to answer questions, you need to have all the documents ready and all that. And it is that process sometimes that becomes problematic, because when people know that you are coming, they will prepare information that may not be sufficient, etc. You raise an important point around compensation. A lot of workers die in these premises. Some get seriously injured. Some get sick. And the neighboring countries have also been complaining to say our nationals are getting sick and they are coming to die back at home, and step up your inspection. And this is something that I think all of us have to work together, because companies that are not complying are the ones that are benefiting from this process. It's like Ms. Ramlongwe said, all these things are done as part of maximizing profits and undercutting on the labor cost, so that, and people know that we don't have the kind of capacity that we need to be able to be everywhere at the same place. That is why we work with trade unions to be an extended eyes and ears of the department to be able to enforce compliance on some of these things. But I will take some of the issues if we have not answered all of them. Thibault will come back to you. Let me, I don't know if he has managed to connect. Thibault, are you back? He doesn't seem to, we seem to have lost him, Honorable Chairperson. Let me ask Advocate Yawa and Dr. Tendai to respond on a whole range of questions relating to the LAP programs and the current allocations and projects that are running. Advocate Yawa.
Thank you very much to the team. Mr. Tejan, I will deal with all that relates to LAP and the training and the CTAS. There's just one question that was asked, whether any companies in the tourism sector are involved in what could be fraudulent activities. Our answer is yes, but Honorable Chair, allow us to then go to the books and pull the actual examples. If when we look into those examples, we are mistaken, we didn't anticipate the question, we will draw this. But we had what we called follow the money, particularly when we paid TERS, the temporary employee relief schemes. We did have bogus organizations who came fraudulently, and there were some also in a variety of sectors, but we'll double check and come back whether any of those that were fingered were in the tourism sector. We'll double check that. We just don't want to off the cuff say yes, there were. It's quite possible, but let's rather come firmly when we shall have referred to the follow the money report and other reports that are with the law enforcement agencies, either as investigations or some of them as matters that are already in court. As to the point that is saying, are we raising problems than talking solutions? No, Chair, we are not. In the point that I raised, that it's a matter that down the line will legislatively be taken care of in the policy that is being developed, is the issue where we're saying AG is beginning to want to question us whether we are right to pay and protect vulnerable workers who are in the country, perhaps without the necessary papers. And as I said, we say to the AG, yes, because the UIF Act empowers us to protect every contributor. And it doesn't say provided that contributor is in the country, in what manner. If the person is a contributor, and if there is an employer-employee relationship, and conscious as we are, like the members were saying, that there tends to be extra exploitation of these workers. We didn't want, and Parliament and government are on the same page on this, that we cannot join the forces of those who exploit them and make them worse off than they should be. So in as far as they must be protected when they go on maternity, they must be protected. The issue of whether they're in the country legal or not will be dealt with by the relevant department, and that department is quite equipped to deal with that, won't cross the line and do what is not our mandate. So we say to AG, there is a department that specifically deals with that item. They are best placed to deal with that. They are trained on it. They know how they go about it. But our space is to protect the vulnerable, and our condition is the UIF Act. Are you a contributor? Are you an employee? Are you employed? And once those are answered in the affirmative, we protect them. So AG is not happy, yes, but they respect the law themselves. When they see the law, then they like back off. If they will, in their recommendations, recommend amendments to the Act, let's not predict that. And as to whether if they shall, that amendment shall be true or not, let's not predict that. But we're not raising it as a complaint or as a helpless situation. We're just forewarning the committee that if it does occur down the line,
You know, those who are leaders must be ahead of the pack. It must not be coming as a surprise to them, but it's quite under control. Mr. Tejane, can you deal with all the others about the programs, the sitters, and so on and so forth? Thank you, Chair, and thanks to the G.
Thank you very much. Thank you very much, Advocate Yawa, and thanks to the honourable member for the question. I think I'll start from bottom and move upwards. Maybe the first thing that I need to indicate, given that sitters have got their own mandate, and my inclination would be, insofar as the issues of learners and stipends are concerned, from a contract management point of view, one would have assumed that when COVID kicked in, there would have been engagement between the parties in the contract to say, look, the economy has stopped for now, therefore we need to put some amendments to the funding agreement so that the contract does not expire and then the learners suffer. But in our context, which is Labor Activation Program, Department of Employment and Labor, in instances such as that, for example, when COVID-19 kicked in and the economy was almost to a standstill and learners could not go to class because there was no movement, we then introduced the COVID-19 stipend, meaning even if and when learners were not attending class or engaging in the learnership or skills programs or the project, then we then introduced what we call COVID-19 stipends, which is a stipend different from the normal one. So that's how we then intervened from our side. And then those that have engaged with us, we then looked into contracts, because in terms of contract management, the contract starts and an end. Those that have mitigating circumstances relating to that, we don't enter into extension of contract, but we enter into undertakings. We then deal with the funding agreement through our legal. It eventually goes to the DG, who then signs an undertaking with those funded partners so that the remainder of the program or the project can then be finalized, because in many instances, there is no financial implication. The money that would have been allocated to that project will still be the same. They would have used some, there will be some remaining. All they need to do is to finalize the project. The reason for us to enter into undertaking is because we want to see those participants or contributors finishing the project and, you know, getting something out of it. So from our side, that's the interventions that we do in terms of addressing those. How do we then deal with the productivity of South Africa, for example, in terms of the basket of services that we have? Productivity South Africa has got different offices in different provinces. In some, they don't. So they've clustered their offices to deal with the regions. And regionally, they do have advocacy and marketing sessions where they market their work. Over and above that, in the department, through the Productivity South Africa website, the department's website, and also communication unit, there is advocacy sessions where we have interviews. For example, just last week, I was on Power FM and Ligwala Gwala FM, and I was talking specifically about lab inclusive of CCMA and Productivity South Africa in terms of the services that we provide. We are currently working with communication on an opinion piece for Labor Activation Program, which will probably be issuing end of this week or next week, where we are also advocating our services. However, we've also engaged with communication insofar as advocacy for towards the end of the year and next year. So that's what we basically do to try and advocate the work that we do. Now, insofar as the effectiveness of the project that LAB has embarked on, I think I must admit that when we started, as I've indicated, 2010 up until late last year, before I started with the Labor Activation Program, we're heavily reliant on sitters, because that was their forte. So insofar as the effectiveness and output. I think we're more reliant on them. But we have changed trajectory. We have held a what we call a labor activation program revamp workshop on the 16th to 18th of November, initiated by the Director General, where we are now repackaging the labor activation program in terms of the expectation out there. One of the discussions there is exactly the impact study in terms of the impact that lab will be doing or is doing out there. And this is going to be on the basis of the newly approved project, which the subcommittee of the board, which is called Labor Activation Program Committee, is also embarking on. They have visited our project at East London IDZ at the end of September, where they were conducting an oversight. And one of the issues they were looking at is exactly the issues of impact. And those are now informing how then we are dealing with the issue of reconfiguration of revamp, which will take care of that aspect. And late today at 4:30, because of the task team that has been set aside for the revamp, one of the issues that will be discussed is exactly that, as we now reconfigure a certain aspect that needs to go into this. So the study, the impact, I think we'll be seeing it as we're moving forward. I think I've dealt with, in terms of the one company that is still being looked at CCMA Single Adjudication Committee. Now, this work is dependent on companies that wish and decide to participate in the scheme. Therefore, any company in South Africa that feels that now they are undergoing or they are going to undergo Section 189, they then are supposed to approach the CCMA, because CCMA is open. So thus far, we're hoping there will be more that we'll see, because where we engage with CCMA, there's a committee rather we've set up, which is constituted by social partners, the business and labor, inclusive of labor activation program in CCMA, and our colleagues from compliance office, where we looked at challenges and proposed solutions for any issues at CCMA. And this is every Thursday of the week. And at that time, we then get to know how many proposals or requests have been submitted through to the CCMA. And then we are able to then quantify and stratify them according to provinces, nature, sector of those particular proposals or companies, and the number of employees that are going to benefit. That's why the information that I have is that there's only one company that has submitted, and we'll just keep an eye as to how many are coming from tourism sector. But I think also moving forward, it is important that there's an advocacy that also companies in tourism may and should submit proposals, because the TERF is across the board. It's not for a specific sector, but those that feel they are in distress. So that's basically, I think, insofar as the issues that were raised. I think the other one was not in relation to COVID. I think advocate has dealt with that. It was in relation to COVID-19 TERF, not the normal TERF. Chair, I think, unless if I've missed something, based on my notes, I think I've covered everything. But maybe the last thing, insofar as CTAs are concerned, because they are responsible for training, we in the past, since 2010 up until recent, the MOAs that LAB has entered with CTAs were on the basis of 50-50. So there will be responsibility from LAB, which is 50%. So insofar as stipends are concerned, there will be an amount that LAB or UIF will be contributing and the CETA will be contributing. And that will then be quantified into the actual amount. So For example, there's a matter that I was dealing with Construction Sita, where we paid them 17.4 million towards the stipend, and the remainder becomes their responsibility. So we'll then advance our portion to them, and then they need to advance their portion. So that's how we've been working and ensuring that our side of obligations are covered. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you very much. I'm not sure if you still have to respond, or maybe you think you are maybe done with the responses.
No, Honorable Chairperson, we are done with the responses.
Okay. Honorable members, those were the responses from the Department of Labor. Members, I think the department, I'm going to request that the department need to actually present us with a report. We cannot just maybe say we are okay, that we need to still find some ways of accountability from the department in terms of their mandate of playing an oversight into their labor department. So I would request maybe for the department to send a report of maybe about 3 or 4 financial years, which are previous 4 financial years at least. I don't want to go very much back to say how many a tourism establishment have been visited by the Department of Labor to check their compliance of labor of health and safety Regulations Act 85 of 1993, those hotels, because we know that the bed and breakfast, at least there is the grading council that actually does part of it. But we want to know about those establishments that are very big, which were visited by CETA, by your Department of Labor, to ensure that there is compliance in the tourism sector in terms of safety and health and safety regulation, Act 85 of 1993. 3-4 years in the province by province, those visits that were done to show the oversight commitment of the department. We really need to hear, Honor, Mr. Jerry Boltina, please make a follow-up that you receive those reports of those province to province visits and inspections from the Department of Labor, just to see whether really the department is concerned about tourism, the department is concerned about the safety of our tourists in our buildings of tourism, whether private and government, we want to see those reports. I think it is very important. We don't normally get you, so we just want to give you that homework in the meantime, as well as their report that they will be giving to the Department of UIF to say these are the statistics of labor in terms of the neighboring foreign countries and our South African people that have been employed in those establishments for the 3 to 4 financial year backwards. So those are that is the homework that I really would like to hear, yeah, because we cannot just go without having something left us with something that we can actually monitor from now going forward. That is my proposal, and I think the committee will definitely be glad to receive those reports so that we can know where are we going from here going forward. Mr. Boltina, is that clear with us that you are going to follow up on those reports? The time frame that we will give to them, we will say in the next coming 2 months, we receive those reports so that we can be able to monitor, making them as a benchmark and going forward. using those reports. Mr. Boltina?
Hello, Chairperson.
Did you hear my...
Yes, I've heard you say, and I'm also taking notes on this side. Also, if I can add just something, Chair, if the findings of their research, it's not a classified information, I would also appreciate it, Chair, if the department can also assist us with that, because we want to take that at some point in time. We may need to have a serious engagement with the Tourism Business Council of South Africa. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you very, very much. So that is what I think we will need as a committee to start somewhere from this, because it looks like there is no data of some sort from the department itself with this in the tourism sector. Hence our tourism sector, somehow we lose direction, because some of the information should be coming from our sister clusters, like the sector which they are right now working, which is the labor sector. So on that note, I would like to really thank the Department of Labor. Looking forward in the next coming 2 months to those reports that the committee will patiently be waiting for to receive, whether there has been monitoring, whether there has been inspection of buildings that we're supposed to be receiving as a sector, also from your department in our private and government establishments, hotels in the cities. Has there been any of those inspections, and we need a report, and which ones were they in terms of, and then they will also give you, if you didn't do the labor inspections, they will give you reports and statistics so that we can be able to check and analyze. At least have something that we can work on going forward to correct this whole thing as well, and be able to play our fruitful oversight role. Let me thank you so much for your presentation, and really you have given us so much information that is going to assist us in taking care of our responsibilities, delivering our mandates of playing a fruitful oversight role as the portfolio committee members. And I would like to release the members of the from the Department of Labor for us, in order for us to continue with the rest of the agenda of the day. And thank you so much for your presentation, and we are definitely going to consider very important issues which were raised here, and also make a follow-up on them. Thank you so much for your presentation and your release.
Thank you, Chair. Thank you so much.
Thank you very much, Chairperson. Thank you, dear.
And you.
Mr. Boltina, we can continue with our agenda. I think we still have an item which is still outstanding that you need to sit and discuss.
Chair, on our side, Chairperson, is the consideration of the minutes of the meeting of the 23rd, Chairperson. Doc, I'm not sure. Can you on your side just if you it's possible just to fly to the minutes?
I'll have to fetch in the system.
Oh, okay. Okay, but what the item that is left, Chairperson, is just for us to consider the minutes of the 23rd of November. Members will recall on that day we were just considering the draft 2021 BRRR report of the committee. We have considered that report and members have made some valuable suggestions. Then all those inputs that were submitted by members, we have included in the final draft. And then the final draft was subsequently circulated to all members and also submitted to Parliament. Now, as I understand, it has already been 80-seat and is in the parliamentary papers. What we have not yet heard from Parliament is when our BRRR report will be considered. So those are the minutes of the committee, Chairperson, a summary of them. And then we are just tabling them to the committee so that the committee can endorse the minutes if there are no issues that the committee wants to raise. Thank you, Chairperson.
Thank you very much, Mr. Boltino. I'm not going to go page by page since we all received the minutes in advance. I would request members to comment on minutes page by page as they have already gone through their minutes, which were submitted before this meeting. Any comment on the minutes? And if not, can we have a mover for the adoption? And a seconder, please. Honorable members who were in the meeting.
I've raised my hand.
Okay, I cannot see because my screen is not made to see the hands, but I can, I recognize you, Honorable Mpushe.
No, thanks, Chair. I move for the adoption of the minutes as a true reflection of our deliberations on the BRRR, Chair.
Thank you.
But also, Chairperson, Sambi, just on the engagement that we had, just for noting with the Department of Employment and Labour, Chair, there's an issue that they raised that has to do with the collaboration of other departments on the issue of creating employment. I think we need to follow up on that and support the minister on that initiative. It's worth supporting for its realization, Chair. Thanks.
Okay. Yes, I think our administration or Mr. Bertina and others together with the committee, we can sit down and see how do we take this forward, because it is definitely very important for us to make a follow-up on today's presentation. There are a lot of loopholes that are really affecting our unemployment rate. I do agree, but let's concentrate on the adoption of minutes. But as soon as that report comes back, we will actually include those issues that are very important that we are raising right now.
Thank you, Chair.
Yes.
Thank you, Chair. Cycle coming up.
Yes, I second the adoption of the agenda, Chair.
Oh, thank you so much.
Adoption of the minutes.
I really do understand. Yes, I also thank you very much for the secondment of those of the adoption of the minutes. Mr. Boltino, are we having any agenda, any item on the agenda, or we have come to the end of our meeting?
Yes, Chairperson, we have come to the end of the meeting, Chair. Just to indicate to members, next week, Chairperson, will be the 7th of December, and it will also be our last meeting where we will be considering our draft program in preparation for the first quarter of 2022, Chairperson. Thank you, Chair.
Okay, thank you very much. Honourable members, on that note, I declare this meeting adjourned or closed. Thank you so much for your attendance. Love you all.
Thank you very much, Chair.
Love you, Komba Komba.
Power to you. Power to you. Power to us. Thank you, Chair.
Long live the Chair.
Recording stop.
Long live me. Komba Komba. Thank you.